dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'm escorting you about the battle space of what I think of as the war for the free world with several guests who are well worth our time hearing from and thinking through various aspects of this particular battle space. We'll be joined initially by our regular feature at this time in the week, Fred Grandy, former member of Congress, now a senior fellow, I'm very proud to say, at the Center for Security Policy. He'll be joining us for our two-segment week wrap-up, as we do this time of, as I say, the week. And we'll be getting to Fred in a moment. We'll be also visiting with Congressman Duncan Hunter for a tribute to our veterans on this Veterans Day. We will hear from him about how we can best salute those who, like him, have served our country with distinction and uniform, and what the stakes are if we fail to understand the importance of their sacrifice and service. And finally, we'll be speaking, as we do again each week this time, with Bill Gertz. He'll take us for a tour of some of what's going on inside the ring with respect to communist China. We're actually hearing people in the Obama administration talking about a new Cold War and an appropriate footing for it with respect to China. All of that and much, much more straight ahead. But first, we have Fred Grandy joining us. Fred is, as I've mentioned, a man who brings a wealth of expertise to these conversations, not only a four-time member of the United States House of Representatives from Iowa, but also a man who has been a star of stage and screen and radio, for that matter, and also a very substantial player in the world of charitable organizations at Goodwill Industries. Fred, with all of this acumen, we are particularly grateful for your considerable thoughtful analysis of what's happening in this Islamist realm, a subject we feature, of course, here at Secure Freedom Radio. And let's start with a couple of things that we've been tracking, you most especially. This fellow Mohammed El-Abiari keeps popping up. What's up with this guy at the Department of Homeland Security, and what does it suggest about the larger problem we're facing with penetration and influence operations?
I wish I could tell you something is up with this guy, because, as you know, he is a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council. This is a citizen panel of individuals that are selected by Homeland Security to advise on how to conduct counter-terrorist and counterintelligence operations in local communities to partner with local law enforcement. And El-Abiari has appeared a time or two as a advisor in terms of creating the countering violent extremism guidelines that Homeland Security has put out. But as you know, in addition to his regular duties, he decided to jump off the reservation and take his security clearance and use it to shop sensitive classified information from lists that he only had access to as a member of this council and send it to a left-wing media outlet hoping he could out Rick Perry. Now, we talked about this before.
As an Islamophobe.
Yeah, but here's the bottom line, Frank. I mean, this story now has been picked up thanks to Congressman Louie Gohmert, who grilled Janet Napolitano, but talk radio, Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, and others have picked it up. But
Eric Stackelbeck, with whom
Eric
we spoke
Stackelbeck
about this week,
has been on this case, but he cannot get an answer from Homeland Security. So
that looks like
stonewalling to me. They will not talk about this guy. Now, at the very least, he should be suspended from any activity, and I think he should be consigned to the outer darkness. But at this point, he seems to be happily under the radar and inside the wire.
Well, as you say, the thing that is so striking about this is he was given not only access to this database, which he then abused, he was, we're told, the only member of this advisory committee to have that access. And you just got to keep coming back to the basic question here. What's going on with these guys? Why are they being treated in this fashion? People with pedigrees of ties to the Islamists, and I think what goes along with that is an affinity for, if not a, you know, abiding commitment to, Sharia, which, as you know, Fred Grandy, is absolutely antithetical to this constitution and form of government and the freedoms that we enjoy under them.
Well, you know, not only is this guy sitting on a state, because he's also on the State Department of Public Safety in Texas, but federal panels, he is now presiding over guidelines that are essentially telling local law enforcement to consult with people like Mohammed El-Abiary if they have a problem dealing with certain religious or ethnic groups in their communities. Now, I mean, to me, that is as about as close to sedition as you can get. But as you point out, he apparently is being protected now, Frank. I don't know how else to describe this, by the Department of Homeland Security, who will not even respond to in questions from Eric Stackelbeck or Patrick Poole, who broke the story in the first place.
Yeah. Let me just drill down on this one point, because I think that for those of our listeners who haven't been following the story, the thing you've just referred to, Fred Grandy, is the practice now of having people like Mohammed El-Abiary, who we know has abused his privileged access to information in the Homeland Security Advisory Council. But apparently people like him are now the sorts of so-called community leaders that the people who will be arranging for training of federal and, as you say, local and everybody in between, the authorities in countering violent extremism, they're supposed to consult with these guys to make sure the training program is okay with them.
Yeah,
if it's not sedition, I don't know what it is, but it certainly is the height of folly to be turning over our training programs. It's like turning them over to the KGB during the Cold War, for crying out loud.
Well, you know, and again, all of these training programs, whether it's justice or Homeland Security, are now saying, let's not have any ideological basis, as if all these guys were motivated only by economics or perhaps a bad diet. But here's the ironic thing. If they're saying that these kinds of people, El-Abiary and people of his ilk, should be community leaders, if these standards had applied in the mid-90s, Frank, the blind sheikh, Abdul Rahman, would not be in prison. He'd be sitting on the Homeland Security Advisory Council telling people who to consult with.
Yeah, I mean, we're laughing about it, but unfortunately, it's no laughing matter. If it weren't so serious, it'd be hilarious, but unfortunately, it's gravely serious. Fred Grandy, let me quickly pivot here. We've been talking about Muslim Brotherhood and similarly minded Islamist penetration of our government. One of the things I want to touch on, and if we need to, we'll go into the next segment about it, but there's been a lot of talk, as you know very well, about the role that Grover Norquist has been playing in all of these sorts of influence operations. He's much in the news these days because of his preeminence as a force to be reckoned with on tax matters. But Congressman Frank Wolf, a man you served with for many years, has taken to the floor of the House of Representatives and issued a statement of conscience about it. It seems as though, from reading Politico, if one does that sort of thing, that Grover's in trouble even on taxes. But do we see sort of the undoing of this this guy who's it strikes me as sort of the man behind the curtain as much as the Wizard of Oz?
He's been, as I'm sure you know, pretty much a Teflon individual for a long time, regardless of whether he was involved with Jack Abramoff and kind of escaped all scrutiny there, or whether he, with his ties to known and convicted terrorists like Abdulrahman al-Mudi. But I really think now he's vulnerable, Frank, because as the super committee begins to kind of close out their deliberations and unfortunately come to no real compromise, a lot of members, specifically 28 members of Congress, Republican members, are saying, hey, this no tax pledge that Grover has made us honor is no longer binding. And for him to kind of hold us accountable is a dereliction of our duty. Now, there was a big story in Politico about this recently, and I thought to myself, the only reason this is going public is because members, in addition to Frank Wolf, now want a little distance between themselves and a guy who is looking more and more like the king of crony capitalism. Nobody wants that alliance.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Hold that thought, Fred. We'll be right back with more with Fred Grandy in our weekend wrap-up on the events of this past week and our look ahead to the ones of next week. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of 3 children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a 5th grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a 5-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget.
As a backdrop
to this debate about 2011, people make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined once again by Fred Grandy, our featured guest in this slot in our week as we look back and look forward. Fred, we were talking before, speaking of looking back, talking about before the break, about the super committee and where it's likely to wind up. This is, of course, the special select committee that was created to try to come up with cuts on the order of $1.2 trillion. And if, as you suggested, it can't quite come to grips with that that requirement, then there's supposed to be a MEDAC supplied 50-50 to discretionary domestic spending and defense spending. We've featured guests throughout the week on this program who have been warning from various perspectives about the dangers that would be associated with $600 billion more in defense cuts on top of the roughly almost half a trillion dollars that's already been earmarked for cuts. What are you hearing about the level of appreciation on the part of your former colleagues in Capitol, on Capitol Hill, as to what the repercussions might be should they wind up going that route?
Well, I think I told you last time we talked about this, that this was always, I thought, a box canyon, a planned ambush for Republicans, because they would wind up between a rock and a hard place where they either have to raise taxes to pay for defense or gut it. And sure enough, just yesterday, Republican Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania proposed a $500 billion revenue increase, which he got enough Republicans to sign off on, but it also involved very tough cuts in entitlements. But this was one of those revenue things where it was going to come through changing the rates and getting rid of certain tax deductions, the kind of which that the person we were just talking about, Grover Norquist, has defended so vigorously. But here's the interesting thing, Frank. The Democrats rejected it out of hand. And I think they did so because they are planning to make their cuts in the defense budget. And Leon Panetta and other, civic-minded Democrats who hold positions of power notwithstanding, I think that has been the plan all along. And unfortunately, now it is becoming, I think, something that will be reality within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. A really frightening proposition. As you say, this Box Canyon would result not just in a lot of Republicans, I'm afraid, meeting a fairly unpleasant fate, but the people who are trying to keep us safe and free. We'll be talking more about that subject with our next guest, relatively new member of the House of Representatives, and veteran, par excellence, really, Congressman Duncan Hunter. But staying with this theme for a moment more, Fred Grandy, we're looking at this playing out, the possibility of this MEDAX being wielded against our national defense capabilities against the backdrop of a very dangerous world, becoming more so, it would seem, by the day. Not least, we've been hearing about the imminence of an Iranian nuclear weapon, right, and the possibility that that may provoke Israel finally to act against what is unquestionably then an existential threat to the Jewish state, and for that matter, perhaps to us. What are you hearing on that, and do you think war between Iran and Israel is imminent?
Well, I don't know if it's imminent, but what concerns me more is if there is an event that triggers a response by Israel, at what point does the United States take sides in this? And what side do we take? You know, one of the things that has really not been talked about enough is the Iranian nuclear establishment, unlike the Iraqi, is not just sited in one location. This is more than one bombing raid. Do the Israelis have the capacity for a first, second, third, or fourth strike? And if they don't, who backs them up? Wink, wink, nod, nod. I mean, to me, I don't see how this happens without the United States either becoming involved or stepping away from an alliance that we've had since 1948 in such a way that I think we've destroyed our relationship with Israel.
Yeah. And what really worries me, Fred, is the perception of that being the case.
Yeah.
Is the sort of thing that almost predictably will catalyze a war against Israel involving perhaps states other than Iran, who have all wanted for decades now, really from the founding of the modern Jewish state, to drive, as they say, the Jews into the sea. So we're looking again at a very inopportune moment, to say the least, for the United States military to be hollowed out is, I think, the most charitable way to describe it. Eviscerated seems more likely. And let me just ask you to putting on your political hat, as well as your knowledge of these various subject areas, what do you expect will be the Republican presidential candidate's level of competency when it comes to addressing these sorts of issues on the first national debate they'll have focusing on defense and foreign policy on the 12th of November?
Well, so far it's been the back bench that has weighed in on this, principally Santorum and Gingrich, who have, I think, been the toughest in terms of defending Israel and trying to back off Islamist influences, whether they're Sunni or Shia. And by that I mean, obviously, Iran or whatever materializes in Egypt. But if you noticed, in the last couple of days, Mitt Romney has just done what looks to be a pretty tough op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying, I will stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Now, if that happens, he's going to have to get elected in the next couple of weeks, I think.
Yep. I think
because
right.
I think it may very well be an event that he will have to deal with if he's lucky enough to become the president. And at that point, he'll have to figure out how to keep them from using it. But at least to his credit, he is now coming forward and talking about tougher sanctions. I don't know if that means going after the Iranian central bank. You know, the sanctions we've imposed against Iran have essentially been hollow themselves, Frank. We've tinkered at the margins and they've gotten around it. But at least Romney is beginning to say this is part of my battle plan. I don't think it's a complete one, but it's encouraging to at least see these guys step up to the plate.
Yeah, well, we'll see if they do in the course of this debate more fulsomely, because I fear, Fred Grundy, that we're at a point now where sanctions, even if they're more vigorous, more robust, shall we say, are unlikely to dissuade this particular regime in Iran, which, let's recall, believes it is God's will that they trigger the return of the 12th Imam, a figure that will usher in the golden age of Islam. The problem is that what, according to their theology, the triggering event will be is something that looks a lot like Armageddon.
Yeah, and
you don't want
Aviv,
guys with you don't want guys with nuclear weapons thinking that that's their mission. Fred, let me just quickly turn to one other point on this subject of sort of national security policy. We've been hearing a lot, as we talked about in the first segment, about the progress that the Islamists have been making around the world. And I'm very hopeful that we'll be hearing from the candidates about whether they appreciate that this issue, this particularly the stealth jihad, which you and your wife Catherine have done so much to help educate people in the Washington area and elsewhere about. We had a chance to visit, you and I, earlier this week with a remarkable man. We had him on the program as well, Mark Dury, a theologian from Australia, an activist down there. And we talked about with him, and I'd like you to share with our audience some insights from his assessment of how Australia is doing in countering this stealth jihad.
Well, his I think most salient comment to me was, well, it had to get worse before it got better. In other words, Australia, much like this present administration, was bending over backwards to accommodate Islamic gestures to fight Islamophobia there. In other words, they were going through the same kind of silly fight we were. They were more afraid of Islamophobia than they were of Islamic terrorism. However, that appears to have changed. And their leaders, their prime minister, their attorneys general are now telling Australians, regardless of their religion, there's going to be one law in this Australia, and it is going to be meted out by our legal establishment, our Supreme Court, and our attorneys general. Now, that's pretty refreshing.
And if people want Sharia to be the law they're governed by, there are lots of other places that they can live in that they can go get that. Fred Grundy, thank you so much for joining us. As always, your contributions, including your segments on this program featuring your colleagues, former colleagues, the cloakroom, are real contributions to the common wheel. Thanks for bringing them to bear here. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, we will be talking with our good friend, Congressman Duncan Hunter, celebrating Veterans Day. Stay tuned.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Congressman Duncan Hunter. He is, I think an exemplary member of the House of Representatives as the first Marine combat veteran of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to be elected to the United States Congress. He succeeded in a seat from California representing his people of San Diego communities, following on his esteemed father, also known as Duncan Hunter, a man who served for 14 years. And I guess, you know, your combined service in the family, Congressman Hunter, and most especially your representing the new generation of veterans makes this a perfect fit for our program today. We are thrilled to have you with us at Secure Freedom Radio, and thank you for your service to our country. And I guess one of the things I'd just like to start off with, if I may, is how best can we, the rest of us who benefit so much from the service of folks like yourself, best acknowledge that incredible sacrifice and contribution that you've made?
Well, Frank, hey, one, great to be with you, too. Thanks for your kind words. Overly kind, I think. You know, you ask me or anybody else, I'll tell you, we just did our jobs when we were called to do them. My answer, very, very simply, and I've been to a lot of events honoring veterans. I've been to a lot of events honoring from generals to wounded warriors. The best thank you that I can think of is just simply saying thank you. That's it. When you see a gentleman or a lady with a hat on that says veteran World War II, or has, you know, one of those Navy hats on that has their ship on the front of it, just say, hey, thanks for your service. That's what I
so say. Nothing of those in uniform,
buddy, whether I know them or not.
Right, right. Yep. Well said, and good advice. Let me ask you about a question that kind of, I guess, makes those sorts of expressions of appreciation all the more important, it seems to me. Do you fear that we as a nation do not have enough of a connection to those who serve? It's kind of one of the fruits of the all-volunteer force and its huge success. Does it worry you that there isn't more of an appreciation on the one hand and a relationship, really, on the other?
It does, and it worries me to some extent, not because I've seen it myself to a large extent, because I probably, like you, live in a kind of bubble where I'm surrounded by like-minded people, right? So when I go to church on Veterans Day, I mean, that's what the church does, is think that they're veterans, et cetera. But we're surrounded by like-minded people. So there is a disconnect. And when I heard it mentioned was when General Kelly, who's now assistant to the Secretary of Defense, Secretary Panetta, his son was killed in Afghanistan last year, about a year ago to this day. And what General Kelly said in his eulogy of his son at Arlington Cemetery last year when I was there, he talked about that disconnect of less than 1% of the population serving and carrying the other 99% of the nation on their backs. And that's where it scares me a little bit, when you have somebody who's been in the Marine Corps for 30 years as a three-star general, loses a son, is the highest-ranking officer to lose a son since September 11th, 2001 in the war on terrorism. That kind of makes it hit home for me. If he feels that way, then that's how we should all feel. Even, you know, once we get outside of our bubbles of like-minded people who we associate with on a daily basis.
We're speaking with Congressman Duncan Hunter. He represents the 52nd District of California, down in the San Diego area. And indeed, as you say, a very, very significant Navy town, a lot of Marines in that area, perhaps the bubble. But part of what it seems to me is going on here, Congressman, is not only the results of the all-volunteer force enabling us to very successfully professionalize the military, but, you know, remove conscription as a responsibility of service from the rest of us. In a way, the base realignment and closing commissions work, shrinking the size of the military's infrastructure, the concomitant contractions as the budgets come down over the years, and consolidation in the defense industry. Just fewer and fewer people have a direct relationship to the military in these various respects. They don't live near bases. They don't. They don't have people in the workforce, either in uniform or otherwise. And I guess the question that I have to you is: do you think that might be contributing to some of what's playing out, as you know so well, and are doing your level best to try to influence in the House Armed Services Committee on which you serve, in terms of the seeming willingness of even Republicans, not everybody by any means, but some Republicans, to hollow out the military of the United States, see it as kind of a bill payer for the deficit reduction drill that we're in at the moment?
Yeah, you know, starting with the last part of your question first, there is definitely, without a doubt, and you can go ahead and say quite a few Republicans, actually, it's not just a few anymore, have come out, and I think to their detriment, and maybe to the nation's detriment, they're not viewing our national security through a historic lens. They're viewing it through a right here, right now. I just got elected last year. I just got into office in January. What am I supposed to do right now to make my constituents happy, and especially to make those who I think directly elected me happy? And those are the folks, unfortunately, who are coming out saying, hey, we can balance the budget on the backs of our military, on the backs of our all-volunteer force, with two wars going on. Iraq is going to be a complete abject failure if President Obama doesn't keep at least some troops there. So I don't see it. As I see it, kind of post-World War II, I think you got to look back to World War II. You got to look back to how we became the basically security of the entire world through ruling all the oceans, and have since then, literally having the biggest navy in the world, having the strongest navy in the world, and being able to control everything in every sea, in every ocean, in every Gulf. America's there. That's what has made us the nation we are today. That's what's made us a superpower. That's what, in my opinion, has made us an economic superpower. And if you start pulling that security away, we're going to be left as a regional power. And I think you have to have a historic sense in order to view it that way. And I don't think a lot of the new members of Congress have that historic sense. I think that they're simply there right now trying to do what they feel they were elected to do, which is balance the budget, even if that means at the expense of our national security. So I think that they, in the end, need to get more of a historic perspective on how to view national security. And I think you'll hear fewer people saying that our security is based on our economy. I think that that's backwards. I think that our economy is based on our security and our position as a superpower and protector of sea lanes, and being able to exert our sphere of influence throughout the world and make other countries come to us and be like a magnet for trade and for other nations. I think that's what's made us a great country, not our economy.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you said that. Congressman Duncan Hunter is our guest again from the 52nd District of California, member of the House Armed Services Committee, a very accomplished man in the public sector, both in uniform in the United States Marines. He served 3 combat tours, 2 in Iraq and 1 in Afghanistan, and became the first Marine combat veteran of those wars to serve in the United States Congress. And I just really wanted to applaud you for that point, Congressman, because we do hear it a lot that, we just can't afford to have a strong military. We've got to get our economic house in order again and become strong economically again, and then we can afford to have a military. It seems as though you would agree that's exactly backwards, that you won't have a strong economy if you're not able to protect your interests around the world in an increasingly dangerous environment.
Yeah, because, you know, the world stage when it comes to national security is just like any private sector competition between two cell phone companies, between Verizon and AT&T. You have the same sphere of influence in between China and the U.S. or even Turkey and the U.S. I mean, you have different people you can play against each other, such as Turkey and Iran. I mean, it's a playing game, but you have to have the ability to project power and force in order to bring other countries into your sphere of influence, or weaker countries will look to other countries. And I think that's the whole key. And what is saddening and maddening sometimes is when you have someone like Admiral Mullen, who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saying that exact thing, that our security is based on our economy. These guys are supposed to be our PhDs of military leaders. They go to all the different academies. They go to the national security schools. They all have masters in national security, but they just don't seem to grasp simple history. Yeah. And once more, when you lose that historical perspective when it comes to national security, you're going to lose. And in this case, losing means the United States becoming a regional power instead of a superpower.
Yeah, at best. Congressman Duncan Hunter, we appreciate your bringing that historical perspective to your service now in the United States Congress, and for joining us from time to time here at Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you'll do it again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Bill Gertz. He'll take us inside the ring for his perspective, historical and otherwise, on the air-sea battle that's coming with China. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system
and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and
listen. I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need, and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined on this Veterans Day by one of the men who does the best job I know of in monitoring what's going on with our veterans, and for that matter, those who are currently serving. He covers the inside the ring for the Washington Times. He is also its national security editor. He is, of course, the inimitable Bill Gertz, and he joins us from Indiana on this Veterans Day. Bill, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. As always, it's great to have you with us.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the show.
You have made some major news this week, or recorded it at least, in terms of something called the air-sea battle. And we've talked about it in the past, Bill. You've been reporting on the fact that there's been something going on here, but you've actually got now the particulars of what this is all about, and it's really quite stunning. Tell us what air-sea battle is and what you've learned that indicates that it might mark a very, very remarkable sea change for the Obama administration.
Yes, this is a very significant policy shift at the Pentagon. And earlier this week, they disclosed the creation of what they call the Air Sea Battle Office. And this is a new office. They gave a background briefing, and you could tell from the comments by officials on background that this was the result of a contentious policy fight over whether to really challenge the Chinese military buildup in Asia. And the good news is Air Sea Battle represents a success for the forces that want to say, look, we've got to do something now to be ready to challenge this growing military power of communist China.
Now, as you know, Bill Gertz, President Obama is, as we speak, en route to Hawaii, where he will be meeting with the Chinese president, Hu Jintao. He's accompanied, I believe, by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who, like her Defense Department counterpart, Leon Panetta, has been making much of the fact that we're now going to really be concentrating on Asia as a theater of interest and activity, including for the United States military. What does Air Sea Battle contemplate in terms of the possibilities of having to deal militarily with the Chinese in that theater?
Well, first, the first political problem is that in order to get this policy approved, there was a certain compromise made in that they would try to play down, at least publicly, that this new policy is directed at China. So at the background briefing, you heard them say it's not directed at any single nation. But then when you ask them, who is developing these unique anti-access and area denial weapons, that is, anti-satellite missiles, anti-ship ballistic missiles, lots of submarines, stealth aircraft, missile defenses, there's only one nation, and that's China. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that as the wars are winding down in Iraq and Afghanistan, there is a shift towards Asia, and this is the first recognition that China is the looming threat for the 21st century. And right now, some of the things that are being contemplated are, first of all, a new long-range bomber, joint Air Force and Navy drone development. There's a whole list of them that I had in my story, and there are lots of things now. It's just a concept. What they need to do is to develop both the training and the forces to be able to use that concept if things do not go well in the Pacific and China emerges as a hostile power that wants to threaten its neighbors there.
Let me reintroduce our guest. He is our featured star national security reporter at this part of the program each week. He is Bill Gertz of the Washington Times. He is the author of numerous books, many of which deal with the very problem we're talking about right now, namely communist China. One that comes to mind, Bill, is your book, The China Threat, How the People's Republic Targets America. Let me ask you this, Bill Gertz. You obviously know as well as anybody in Washington the challenges that the Defense Department is facing at the moment, most especially budgetary challenges. As you've pointed out in your reporting on this air-sea battle, there is much about this that is kind of gleam in the eye. Long-range bombers that are still on the drawing boards, the kinds of capabilities that are contemplated to deal with present or certainly incipient Chinese capabilities are going to take a lot of money. Do you see this really materializing as a countervailing capability, or is this just kind of whistling past the graveyard by people who now maybe appreciate the Chinese threat but aren't going to be able to do much about it, if anything, for years and only if the budgets come through?
Good question. You know, I've talked to defense officials about this, and they have assured me that Panetta has made this the priority, that obviously the pie of defense spending is going to shrink dramatically, but one of the top priorities will be bolstering forces and alliances in Asia. During his recent visit to Asia, Panetta said that there would be enhanced military capabilities. And, you know, if you look at the drawing board, there's, you know, I mean, we've got pretty good military capabilities now. So the fact that they're going to have new capabilities for Asia is a positive sign. Now, is it going to be easy to push that through in the political environment? No, it's going to be difficult. But I think clearly this is a really significant step in, first of all, recognizing the threat. I mean, this is for the past two decades, there's been a huge fight over whether China even poses a threat. This has gone way beyond that, and it says, look, the threat's there. We've got to do something about it starting now.
You credit in your piece Inside the Ring this week an old colleague of ours, Michael Pillsbury. Dr. Pillsbury is one of the eminent Sino experts in our country, the Chinese military experts in particular.
Yes.
And he played obviously a critical role in helping the blue team, as it's been called, prevail over the red team, it seems, in at least getting this threat down. Bill, there's a striking statement in your column to the effect, the news article, I should say, that you wrote about this air-sea battle concept, to the effect that this is the dawn of a new Cold War posture, or yes, Cold War style posture vis-a-vis China. Again, is that not a rather dramatic departure from how the Chinese have been perceived by the Obama administration to date? And I'm wondering, yeah, we're speculating here, but do you think that this sort of this attitude is going to be reflected in the summit meeting between the two leaders in the next few days?
It's going to be very interesting to see how the Chinese respond. They usually take about 48 hours or more to counter this, but they've already attacked in their state-run media the air-sea battle concept. Clearly, yeah, the quote from a senior Obama administration official was that this new concept is to China what the maritime strategy was to the Soviet Union. And those of us who lived through the Cold War, yeah, we know that this was an aggressive forward naval presence to show the flag and to counter Soviet military forces around the world. So, you know, this is not, I'm not making this up. This is how this is being perceived within the halls of power in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, I'm gratified that you're not making it up, and hopefully those who you're now being sourced by aren't making it up either. They're actually serious about this, because as we talk about virtually every week we have you with us, Bill Gertz, this is indeed the coming threat, and the country is, I believe, very ill-equipped to deal with it. Very quickly, Bill, we've only got about a minute left. One other seemingly important straw in the wind here is the announcement that there will be a new permanent U.S. military base constructed in Australia. How does that fit into this overall strategy?
Very significant. It's absolutely one of the key elements of the new air-sea battle concept. This is going to be a joint U.S. Marine Corps Australian military naval base at a barracks near Darwin, which is on the northernmost coast of Australia. It's very strategically located south of the South China Sea, which is quickly becoming kind of the focal point for Chinese hegemony. Those are strategic waterways, and there's also lots of resources there, and we're getting more and more reports of the Chinese aggressively trying to push out other states from that area. So, yeah, this is going to be signed when President Obama meets with the Australian president in Australia.
As part of this sweep. Bill Gertz, thank you so much for these reports. Keep us posted on what develops, needless to say. Have a blessed Veterans Day to all of our listeners, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.